So Carl's at a party in Hollywood. Steve Martin comes up to him. Says, Mr. Ballantyne, I don't know if you know this, but I have to say you influenced my work early in my career. And Carl says, hold on! Disneyland, Main Street, 1955. Steve Martin says, yeah. And Carl says, yeah, where's my check?
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we continue with part three from my week at the Magic Castle with two fun but completely divergent curiosity conversations. The first chat is with Lisa and Scott Land, puppeteers who are working in the palace this week. We had breakfast together, and as we left Mel's Diner, I switched on the recorder so you could get the feel of walking down Hollywood Boulevard chatting with us and hearing all the interesting background noise. You will also enjoy seeing some of the photos I took along the way, which are on the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, and even a short video taken by Lisa as we got back to the Nirvana Apartments where we were staying. You can also see the Magic Castle in the background as we were chatting in this video. After our chat, I walked up the hill for an appointment with the general manager of the Academy of Magical Arts, Joe Furlow. He brings us up to date on what's been going on recently around the castle, plus future plans. But before we set out on this little excursion, I have to give a brief shout-out from one of my favorite L.A. eateries, Cantor's Deli. I recorded a brief chat with myself during lunch the previous day from there before I set out to record an exclusive podcast with a local magic celebrity that will be broadcast soon. This soliloquy won't take long, but I think it adds to the texture and the experience of what I'm doing out here. So, relax and enjoy part three from My Week at the Magic Castle here on The Magic Word.
Well, as I've been traveling around before my week actually begins, I've been eating at a lot of places, as you have heard, like In-N-Out Burger and also at Pink's Hot Dogs. And then I went down and found a new place, thanks to Newell Unford, tell me about going to Tommy's Burgers. That was awesome. Double cheese chili hamburger is just awesome. And, of course, this is a must-eat place over here. I just arrived at Cantor's Deli, and so I'm having a pastrami and corned beef. Reuben, and can't be beat. One of the best in town. It's always a great place. Going to be coming back here probably a time or two for breakfast and other meals as well, because Cantor's is the best. You come out this way. So, until a little bit later, Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are walking in Hollywood. Just finished breakfast over at Mel's Diner. I'm here with Lisa and Scott Land. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, look. Somebody's selling something on the street. Yeah. Oh, a career. Nice.
Uh-huh. And so you two guys are working at the castle here this week, and how many years have you been coming over to the castle?
I've been performing at the castle for 16 years now. And tonight, I think it's show number 39 as far as weeks. I think it's been 39 weeks I've done, something like that.
You've almost got a full year working at the castle.
Yeah.
Is that the idea? Then you're going to retire?
We come for the chili. We like the chili at the castle.
You know, that's funny. Last evening I had just the du jour soup, whatever they call it. it was vegetable beef. And where are we going? This way or that
this
way?
We'll
okay.
Go this way.
Down Hollywood here. And a lady next to me was having a chili, and I said, you know, they've got good chili here, so I'm going to have it tomorrow night.
So you haven't had it yet?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, it's actually quite popular.
Do they have beans in the chili?
Yes. I think they do.
Yes, okay. And have it with a Guinness, because that's, you know, my favorite thing.
Well, Guinness is mother's milk to me. I love a Guinness.
Oh, I love you, Scott Wells.
Kathy and I spent some time. We went over to Dublin, and actually went there to the Guinness brewery, because that was,
wow.
And I've heard that it's, of course, when you get it fresh, it's even better in Ireland than it is whenever you cross the Irish Sea and you go over into England. So it's the Guinness in England is different than the Guinness in Ireland.
I'd wow. Never leave Ireland, never.
It's beautiful, beautiful. So Alicia, you paint the dolls. You call them dolls, figures, vents.
They're
puppets.
Yeah, puppets is fine, but most people go, well, what is your most popular type of puppet you work with. And we do mostly marionettes in our shows, but we build vent figures and then the hand puppets and rod puppets. But we just say puppets in general, and then people kind of get it. But when you say doll, I don't get offended, but all the puppeteers do, because the grown men playing with dolls, that would never happen.
Ah, I see. Okay. And your background, and Lisa, of course, is in art, and so he carves them, and then you sand them and everything? I mean, you start with a big block of wood, and then she paints them? What do you...
Actually, I sculpt everything from clay, and then I make a silicone mold, and then I pour into the mold urethane, so it's like a plastic. It's kind of more along the effects line and more current in the materials rather than wood carving. I love wood carving. It's just that wood carving means that you only can do one, and I will make a mold, and then I can do multiples of it, so it's more effective.
It's more work for me is what it is.
Yeah, I'll do the animation, get it moving, then I hand it over to Lisa, and then she does all the finishing and the painting of it. All done by hand, not with an airbrush.
Yes, all done by hand. I'm a fine artist. I've been a fine artist for about 30 years, and I do portraits, murals, and landscapes, and now I do 3D puppets.
Have you shown in galleries and things like that?
I have, very rarely. I don't like to do that. I like to have my work available to the masses, and when you do it in a gallery, they like to take a little too much money, so I have to make the prices too high for normal people to purchase.
Yeah,
so,
I understand. Yeah.
By the way, this is the El Capitan on our left as we're walking by. This is owned by Disney, and this is when they renovated it, they made it such a show place, because before their major performances with the films, they will have a live show. And Greg Wilson of the Wilson family just performed 3 months ago on that stage. Beautiful stage. And then next to the El Capitan is the Jimmy Kimmel Theater. And that both spaces are owned by ABC, which is Walt Disney, Disney Productions.
You know, I'm supposed to be able to come back out and see Jimmy's show and go back to the green room. Actually, what happened some years ago when the Super Bowl was in Houston, that they were looking to have Jimmy come out, and they were going to tape live in someone's home in there. And I was one of eight homes that was selected, and so they came out like with a video crew and everything, and they liked my magic, and I had my house kind of had tricked out with some stuff anyhow, that we went back and they showed the video to Jimmy, all these different places, and they ended up not using my house, but they did say that he would like me to come out and hang out, and here's some pictures and t-shirts and stuff that we'll give you, and the next time you're in LA, let us know, and you can go back to the green room and hang out. So what do you got? What's this?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're passing the star right now, Julie Andrews, as we're walking back over towards the castle. These are some of the greatest stars of all time along this strip right here, right in front of it. John Travolta.
And Bill then and Mel Larson's up ahead.
Robin Williams. I was here when he had passed, and this was decorated the whole day, you know, as a memorial.
I should take a picture of you since that you look so much like
him. Yeah. We did. Actually, that day was surprising. A lot of people were taking pictures of me by being next to the star, and they would say that. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to pause this, and I'm going to take a picture and put that on the site here a second. Cool. So we've got that photo taken. You can go back to the blog and take a look and see a picture of Scott next to Robin Williams.
William Shatner.
Yep. People say I look like William Shatner. Somewhere between Jerry... Jimmy Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy
sure.
Johnson.
Look at that, Lisa. Sasha Gabor.
Sasha. Yep. As I said, Bill and Milt Larson's.
Yeah. Elton John. Yeah, I've got
coming up soon from the Magic Castle.
Yeah, don't put a hit on me. It's just me, baby.
Thanks.
And then this was the Grauman's Chinese Theater. The Sid Grauman created it basically as one of the first show places for celebrities to have their premieres. And then they did the immortal putting your hands in the prints in the cement. And they continued it on to this point. But it isn't called Grauman's anymore.
It's Mann's. Mann's.
Right.
Yeah. I understand that the Nirvana, where we're staying over here, was actually, the architect was the same person who designed the Chinese Theater.
Yeah, he actually created the Nirvana first, and then the Grauman's second. Yeah. Kind of like the Magic Castle. That's the second building. The first building is in Redlands, California. That's a mirrored image of the castle, and it was owned by the Kimberly family. Kimberly Crest is the name of the space. And then after that, then the architect came here and built the second one, which is the Magic Castle, and everyone thinks that's the original. No, that's the second one. So,
and where was the other one located?
Redlands, California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
where I was born and raised.
Yep, Milton Bill Larson Star. I've actually got a picture of that. That's going to be on the website already.
Wonderful,
too. Yeah,
wonderful.
That was cool. And then Houdini and David Copperfield.
Oh, right up there. Yeah, and Penn and Teller.
And I didn't see Penn and
right
Teller,
there.
Too.
Yeah, they're right up there.
Where's that? Yeah, let's go to that one, too.
Okay,
I missed that.
That's the street.
Okay.
Yeah, so Redlands, California has the original castle, Kimberly Crest, and that's where the great Harry Blackstone raised his family. So I was kind of hanging out with Harry Blackstone when I was a kid, not knowing that I'd then later be performing at the castle.
How did I pass that right there? Okay, well, let me just take a photo of that then, too. Well, this goes on for miles, because when I was walking to lunch, yeah, there's Houdini, when I was walking to lunch over to Tommy's Hamburger, it was a mile and a half exactly from here, and on both sides of the street for the mile and a half.
Yeah.
You know, they've got, and in the other direction also, you know, all of these stars.
It's Hollywood. It's like the South. We have mosquitoes everywhere. We got damn celebrities everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's fascinating is they didn't really have a game plan. They just thought it was kind of a cool way to promote the films, and now it's become so popular. And if you ever look at the Hollywood sign, originally it was designed as Hollywood Land.
Yes.
And it was a development to draw people up into that area to look at this new tract of homes.
Right.
And then they said, well, take off the land. Now we've got a logo that we can use, never knowing that it would become iconic. And literally down the street by maybe a half a mile was Carl Ballantyne's house. Carl Ballantyne lived right on Beechwood, and we would hang out up there. And he would, you know, basically have cigars and watch the racetracks. And then he would go down the street for his auditions as an actor, a character actor for all the years. Catch a bus, come on into town. Or then his friends would always give him a ride over to the Magic Castle. And then we hung out at the castle for about 11 years. But Carl Ballantyne's daughter, Saratoga, and I were actors together. And we were picketing McDonald's at the time because the Screen Actors Guild was on strike. And that was our job. We had to picket because they were using, you know, scab labor, exactly, in their commercials. So I said to Sarah, I said, I'd love to meet your dad. I'm a big fan. And she said, oh, here's his number. So I called him up, and he said, yeah, let's meet at the castle Friday lunch. Showed up, and then we were friends for 11 years and hung out, went to the castle once a week or went and had lunch. Never had a bad meal with Carl Ballantyne. Always the funniest.
He had the most fantastic stories.
Yeah, he...
Like what? Tell me one.
Well, Carl Ballantyne created his act essentially because he realized nobody cared about a classic magician. And when he watched on the vaudeville stage, the curtain opened and all these musical instruments were on the stage. The guy came out and talked about each instrument and got big laughs. And then the curtain went down. And he said, the guy didn't even do one note. And he said, that's what I'll do in magic. Not one actual trick. And so that was the premise, and then he realized you can only do so many stereotypical jokes about magicians, and that became his act that he honed into about a 12-minute routine. He's playing the Palladium, and there was a guy up in the balcony watching him. And he said, every show, the guy would be watching him. He's like, who is this guy? Years later, his prop maker, Carl's prop maker, said, this Englishman wants me to build all the props you use in your act. Is it okay? And Carl says, hey, you got to make a living. Why not? So the guy built all these props for Tommy Cooper.
Oh,
that's
England,
how Tommy
yeah.
Cooper got his start, was taking Carl Ballantyne and then putting his spin on it, and then he became an international star. Same thing, Carl Ballantyne working Disneyland Main Street for Walt Disney at the opening for 2 weeks straight, and this kid's watching him the entire show, every show out on the Main Street, and says, you know, who is this guy? And then 20 years later, Carl's watching television, and he says, that's my stuff. Who is this? It was Steve Martin. So Steve Martin had then taken a lot of pieces from Carl, and Carl's like, I never got paid. So Carl's at a party in Hollywood. Steve Martin comes up to him. Says, Mr. Ballantyne, I don't know if you know this, but I have to say you influenced my work early in my career. And Carl says, hold on! Disneyland, Main Street, 1955. Steve Martin says, yeah. And Carl says, yeah, where's my check?
Yeah, because Steve Martin was working at a magic shop, I think, wasn't he, in Disneyland?
Exactly
there on Main
right.
Street, yeah.
Exactly right. And so Carl said, I never got a check. Then
he was serious?
Yeah. And so they gave the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Magic Castle given by Steve Martin. And Steve Martin said, we have the greatest in our world of magic, and he's influenced all of our works. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the great Ballantyne. And Carl walked out. Everybody applauded. And then Carl looks at Steve and gets close to the mic and says, did you bring the check? And the audience doesn't know what that means. And then Steve Martin goes for his wallet and starts to pull it out, and he says, "It's not important, but it's the thought that counts." And everyone applauded. And then 2 years later, Carl passed. But he made his point.
Now, you have also made a puppet of Carl Valentine and do an homage to him also.
Yeah.
Because of your friendship. And I guess he got to see your show before he...
He did. It was interesting. I sculpted the head and animated it and showed it to him. And the first thing he says, "It's got a big nose." And I thought I had insulted him. And he said, "I'm just kidding. It's fantastic." So we presented at the Magic Castle. And that night, sadly, Carl got food poisoning. So he did not see the actual first performance. But he was outside the castle relaxing with a trash can in front of him, trying to get over it. And then two people came up that were great big fans of Carl's. And one was David Carradine. David Carradine basically said, "Carl Ballantyne, I love you because you worked with my father." And it was true. John Carradine, his father, had worked with Carl, and they were big fans. So they hung out and had a talk while I was out on stage performing. And there was one other actor, I don't remember who it was, but he was like a big fan of Carl Ballantyne.
So. Yeah. Now, the routine, how long, I mean, you don't do this whole 12-minute routine as a puppet, do you?
I mean, it's it's about 3.5 minutes long, and the table is designed, has a vacuum cleaner, so it can actually suck things out of his hand and make things disappear.
Uh-huh.
But Carl did the voiceover for it, and we went to do the recording at a sound studio just to record his voice, and I handed him the copy, and he looked at it, and he said, "I can't read it, the letters are so small." And I didn't think, you know, here's a 90-year-old man.
Yeah.
So I said, "Let me just give you the premise," and then he improvised, and he did 40 minutes of all Carlisms, one takes, everything. How else? You know, all of that.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, the sound crew said, "Do you mind if we make copies for our own personal library? Because we love Carl Ballantyne." So they all burned a copy for themselves.
So you have that... that audio. Do you still do this that show from time to time here at the castle, I assume?
I do. It's a very popular piece for me because magicians love his voice, and right when the puppet walks out, and I could never do Carl's act, but it has the heart of Carl Ballantyne in it.
It's such a popular piece that we've played it all over the world, and right now I'm redoing Carl and his magic table and repainting him and making him fresh and clean and brand new.
Any other magicians that you've done? I mean, like Houdini getting out of a straitjacket or something, perhaps?
No, we have that one in the works, to be honest with you.
Really, that very one?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah. Because
great minds.
And then we started working one on David Copperfield, basically making the Statue of Liberty in miniature disappear.
Yeah.
And then
better hurry, because that's starting to get kind of part of history now. You know?
Oh, yeah, completely. And what's so amazing is the fans of magic will always refer back to those cliches, those moments that they remember.
Sure.
And you can immortalize it through a puppet, and then the new audiences think it's a brilliant new idea.
Yeah. Well, like you're saying, you know, you have Michael Jackson, and when he was alive, some of the lines you used were topical, and you have to change your, you know, what you're saying, the narration on this, completely different, you know, but because the puppets are still beautiful and the routine is good, you just need to change what you're saying.
Exactly, the introduction or making it
fresh. When you're doing it also, that I notice it's almost like a Japanese art where that you are wearing black pants, and that so you are not behind a screen, but you're walking on kind of a tabletop, so people who may not have seen your act.
Yes.
Why did you choose to do that versus...
It's called cabaret style of marionette manipulation, and it means that you don't have to have a proscenium, and you don't have to block the audience from seeing you. It's just through light and through the shadow that you disappear, and then they can see that you're actually the performer, much like a close-up magician, where you let them see your hands, and then through skill, the audience accepts that the true magic comes out of it. So the marionette manipulation is all out in the open, and they can pick and choose whether they want to watch you as a puppeteer or just focus on the marionette.
Why did you choose to go that way as opposed to the other? I mean, did you do both for a while? Or
actually, I felt that for me, when I started as a kid, the easiest way to travel is with a one-man quick show. And if you don't do the proscenium show, you don't have as much equipment to travel with. So it's a matter of convenience. Kind of like a close-up magician that carries everything in his pockets.
And how many puppets do you have altogether?
Right now, we have 162 marionettes, and I'm always building new ones, and we're making things for new clients. We do commissions. So I guess in my career, I've built over about 350 marionettes.
Because some of them are not actually being used. They're just given to someone as an art piece, and they hang in their own home as or museum. Or
it's basically somebody will hire me, I'll do my act, and then we have a special new character to present, and then it's of the person that we built that walks out, performs, and the audience goes crazy, and then we give it to the client as a gift.
Right.
Yeah, at the end.
Very neat. Well, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so my question to both of you, then Lisa also, then and to Scott, what would be your magic word? I don't mean necessarily like abracadabra or whatever. I mean, what is important in your life? What's your, what moral values do you live by? What's important in life to you? And it could be a phrase, not necessarily a word or whatever.
Compassion and honesty.
Love that.
Both. Yeah, and I'll say integrity and commitment.
Both good. All four. Great. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Scott. Thank you,
Thank
Lisa.
Thank you. It was a great trip. This guy wants to go and exercise more. We want to go back to bed.
Well,
What's going on, Scott?
Yeah, Mel's Diner was great. It's the first time I'd been there in all these years, so that's convenient, too, and that was really good, and a piece of Hollywood history as well. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, sir.
That was Scott and Lisa Land for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I'm here then with Joe Furlow, who's the general manager of the Magic Castle Academy of Magical Arts. I guess what is actually restated exactly?
General manager of the Academy of Magical Arts, located here at the world famous Magic Castle,
which is a clubhouse for the Academy.
That is correct.
Okay, just want to get this right straight. We'll talk about this later, as far as the separation of things. I'm trying to understand a little better with the board of directors and everything else. We were just talking about Dean Dill's some of his artifacts that we're going to be on loan then for a while. And so typically you'll have something like the Cardini exhibit. Is it going to go where the Cardini is now? Or
it will be located in the inner circle. We've actually built some new cabinets that have actually been installed over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, it's right next to the W.C. Fields bar. I've seen the blue
paper.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. And we actually built one that's about 36 inches deep, and that was specifically built for displays like Dean Dill. We are entering into agreement with Denise Dill, the widow, for a two-year kind of commitment. We have Dean's barbershop chair. We have his sign. We have one of his close-up tables. We're just working right now on the video that kind of tells the story, because I think somebody who's not familiar with the world of magic will go down and say, why is there a barbershop chair located at the Magic Castle? So if we do a little bit of story about how Dean was so influential in magic here in the Southern California area, I think it'll completely make sense. But the other cabinets down there, we're very excited to say there's going to be a history of magic in Los Angeles display, as well as the display of the Magic Castle items. So, you know, ashtrays dating back to the 60s that had the logo.
Sure, I remember those. It had like Mark Wilson in the front and those kinds of things. That I got three or four of those, I think.
Absolutely. You know, everybody's come out of the woodwork and told us how much they have. I actually have two ashtrays from the Magic Circle, if you can believe that, that we're going to put on display as well. So Bill Goodwin, Lisa Cousins, that both work down in our library, as well as the Board of Trustees and myself, we've worked really hard to kind of put together a timeline and pull some items that we're able to put down there on display and hopefully make those meandering, wandering about the castle. It'll give them a little better history lesson.
I like the idea that you have now where there are small videos and you could push a button and it tells you a little bit about whatever this artifact is, that is the bar or whatever. Are you going to, or else maybe it's just like W.C. Fields will be a video of him on the pool table or something like that. Are you going to be continuing to do those kinds of things?
I think that's going to be a major push in the next like 5 years. I think we're going to look at every wall inside the building and say, what can we do? When you talk about the gallery of art as you transition from the dining room down to the palace area, you know, I would really like that to be the Hall of Fame and really hang some photos up there of those that we feel are in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, the Board of Trustees has gotten very much involved. You know, this is one of those really slippery slopes. You know, Milt has always had control of the walls, and just recently he's given us the ability to kind of do what we wish on those walls. But, you know, it's been 52 years where Milt had basically control, so we're taking it step by step, and we want to make sure he's comfortable with anything we do.
And something that just had a transition. You're moving over because this was the house that Milt built, I guess, basically. And so he has his own organization. I know he has an office just right next door and everything. And so what is his company, Milt Larson Enterprise, or...
It can go either way. Magic Castles, Inc. is really the company that we kind of deal with, and they have the trademark on the words Magic Castle. The last 3 or 4 years, we've tried to make a point to actually brand the Academy of Magical Arts. You know, that's the association that all of us are members of. We just have a really cool clubhouse called the Magic Castle. You know, in the end, you know, last week we did have a mediation between the two companies, and we've put together what I believe is a great agreement that takes us all the way through 2040. The attorneys right now are drafting the paperwork. I can't give too many details because I haven't seen all of the details, but I think both sides are very happy, and we're going to be able to continue to call this building the Magic Castle for hopefully eternity.
Well, that'd be great. Now, as I recall from the beginning, of course, this—I guess—the hill was owned then by the Tom Glover, and I remember pictures years ago in which it was just a handshake, I guess, with Bill and Milt and Tom Senior, and then he had passed, and then the family has it, and I understand then that's where it kind of all went sideways, I guess, a little bit.
No, you know, I don't think it's gone sideways. I mean, we still lease the building after 52 years, and we do want to make it a point to buy the property. We would like to buy this clubhouse. We'd like to buy the parking lot. You know, there as GM, I'm kind of caught between a rock and a hard place at times. I want to fix something, but without owning the building, there's only so much I'd be willing to fix. Whatever I do, I need to be able to take with me if we were to ever leave this property, God forbid.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been my thought process. You know, we can change out air conditioners. We can do new tubing. You know, we can change out the carpet and the draperies and so on and so forth. But when you talk about structural issues, I still have to go through the landlord. We had an idea 2 years ago to kind of reroute everyone as they exit. So instead of exiting back through the lobby, as we've done for numerous years, we were going to actually shrink the lobby a little bit, actually make it a little bit more quaint, and then actually redirect everybody out through our coat room closet, which is located near the men's bathroom, down in the main bar area, and actually exit out that way to get back out to the outside. It was an idea that I think had a lot of merit. We brought in an architect. We did some research. We went to the landlord, pitched the idea. We went to the city, and of course the city's like, well, we'd be happy to let you do this, but you're going to have to upgrade your building about $50,000 on ADA. And one of their ideas was actually to take out the men's bathroom in the main bar area and just make it basically one toilet. And that's when we kind of put the kibosh on that entire plan. So we did enlarge the gift shop. We actually took over the old valet room.
I noticed that it was this when I came back this year. It was a little deeper. I thought, is that a mirror or something?
No, it's deeper. And it's, you know, Jen Ovadia, who's been our retail manager for the last year and a half, has done a wonderful job putting great items in there. And the sales have increased dramatically. When I arrived, we were averaging about $4,000 a month in sales in the gift shop. Now we're doing $16,000.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
It's been amazing. So the extra square footage in that room has really opened it up to put some items on the shelf that we've never had. And, you know, brunch. I mean, anytime you come here for a brunch, there are kids in there. I mean, every time I bring my kids, I can't get out of the building without buying a deck of cards, a T-shirt, a hat, or a magic kit. I just, it always amazes me. And when we bring guests, it's even worse.
Yeah. And you are credited with kind of turning the Magic Castle around and getting it kind of on firm footing, and then of course with Neil Patrick Harris coming in then and bringing in that youth element, I guess, that there were some pretty radical changes a few years ago that really kind of put the castle back on the map for the public, I guess.
Sure. You know, I can't take all the credit. I would never do that. When I walked into the situation in 2012, you know, it was pretty dire. My first day on the job, I realized that we had about $200,000 in the bank. I really felt like our financial stability was in question. That first day, I called Neil and I asked him where he was. And he was over at Fox Studios filming How I Met Your Mother. And I asked for a meeting. I said, you know, can you create an hour for me? I need to come over and share some of my concerns. I went over to the Fox Studio lot, met with him in the cafeteria, and kind of shared my concerns about I need to start making decisions immediately. When I was hired, I had a 120-day plan. I chucked that right out the window because we were really in trouble. I didn't feel like we had finances to be able to make it through the next 3 months. So we had to make some decisions, and that was kind of shoring up our labor, kind of shoring up our food, you know, going after vendors that we felt gave us great price, yet great quality. We had to basically start from the ground level, if I can use that analogy, and really start working our way up. You know, we had a lot of turnover, unfortunately. You know, from my senior management team, which is 15 strong, I only have three that are still here that were here that first day.
Original group,
You know, some people we had to make some decisions on and kind of part ways and wish them the best. And we brought in people that kind of believed in my level of service, which is we're going to go above and beyond. I mean, that's truly what it basically comes down to.
It's hospitality.
I call it the castle way. And everybody laughs at me and they say, what is the castle way? And it's crossing every T and dotting every I every time. Period. End of story. You know, somebody comes up and asks for a request, don't say no. Let's try and find a way to accommodate.
Right.
And if we can't accommodate, then let's try an alternate plan to be able to keep them happy. Valet is a prime example. You know, the company that I inherited, it was an outside company that took care of our valet.
Yeah.
It was a very hard decision for me to make that decision to terminate that contract and actually bring the valet in-house. We hired a great manager in Christos Karnakis. We stole him away from a hotel over in the Santa Monica region.
Yeah.
And we started to build the business plan to really put forth a great valet department.
How does that change? I mean, to me, a valet is a valet. They just park your car and they're bonded, so they're not going to steal you anything from your car.
Sure.
I mean, what is different? How do they...
They're the first persons you see.
Correct.
And they're the last persons you see.
So they have to have a good personality and not just say, give me your keys.
You want them to buy into what we're doing
and
here
to welcome
as much
you
as
here.
Anybody. If it's an outside company, all they're concerned
they're
about
invested.
Is themselves. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to say it, which is they're not invested. Having our employees that buy in and get information and are up to speed and know who's coming and who's not coming, you know, that's really important to me. And I think that's been a nice, swift, you know, punch to the bottom line. Obviously, that's about $500,000 a year to the bottom line when it comes to revenue. But I think it's an element with the bottled water and the little advertisements and directions back to the freeway that we hang on guests.
Yeah, that is something, by the way. I noticed that last evening that they were handing out bottles of water to the valet while you're waiting for your car.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
It's great. You know, obviously, during the summertime when it is warm and you're wearing a suit, it's not as uncomfortable. You know, it's pretty uncomfortable, I should say.
Well, not like Houston, hot.
Right.
But it's better.
I'm a California boy, so that's all I know. But there are times it's really difficult to put on a suit, and we know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to obviously enjoy some water on the way home after having a few libations, you know, here in the club.
Well, other things that you had done, of course, is hospitality. As being a performer here, I just want to thank you for the great hospitality. First of all, Jack Goldfinger does a wonderful job. And whenever I come, he always says, welcome home. And I feel that. I'm home. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that because I know he genuinely means it. He's a great guy, and I feel part of a family every time I come here, of course. And then you've got a butler, you've got people who are kind of there making sure that you can have your food and drink whenever you want it. With the Nirvana, with the hotel for that, we got a place to stay, which, you know, when I started coming in the 80s when Bill Larson had first hired me, it was, you know, it was a losing proposition, obviously, to come out here. And then I understand we got another property that is being built. I'm kind of jumping way around, but can you talk about some of these changes? And
you know, it's funny, I call it the Field of Dreams concept. You know, that was part of my pitch when I met with Neil over at Fox Studios, which is if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And I felt like we needed to start with the magicians because ultimately, you guys are the rock stars. Mm-hmm. That's why they're here. It's, it's not for the food. It's not for the customer service. They're here to see incredible magic. And so to be able to give you a raise right out of the chute, I had to convince the board to do that. We didn't have a lot of money in the bank. And I said, look, if we can give them any kind of raise, I think it sends a great message that obviously we do care.
Mm-hmm.
The per diem, the $70 per day that we give you in food and beverage credit to basically enjoy our food, enjoy some libations.
Mm-hmm.
The butler. The butler idea came about by George Robert. George performs here a couple times per year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he always talks about how his wife gets so angry at him because he forgets to eat. He's so caught up.
Sure.
You know, prepping for a show, doing his show, you know, winding down from his show that he always forgets to eat and he doesn't want to eat after midnight. So the butler was an idea that, you know, almost like room service where we'd have a menu there for you.
Mm-hmm.
We'd be happy to take the menu, be able to place it whenever you want at whatever time you wanted. But we wanted to make sure that you actually got some food because obviously we don't want you to run out of energy. and it's been really good. I think our performers really enjoy that. The apartments across the street were an idea I came up with. We were putting people in hotel from time to time. At a $1,400 per week expense. The apartments across the street are $1,400 per month.
Wow.
You know, I can put in three times, four times the amount of people
if
I did get the apartments. But then it was trying to find an apartment company that kind of bought into what we were doing. When you talk about subleasing, which is exactly what we were doing, I had to find a company that understood what we wanted to do. So we do run it like our own hotel. We have four rooms over at the Nirvana, named for John Calvert, Billy McComb, Don Lawton, and Charlie Miller. And then we do have two more apartments that we just brought on board. They're over at the Commodore, which is kind of the sister apartment complex to Nirvana. It's basically about four blocks away, but it does allow pets. And so when we do have magicians that come into
and
town...
And parking,
for sure. But when they do have pets, we can't put them over at the Nirvana. But now we can put them over at the Commodore. So those magicians with birds or cats or ducks, you know, we have a place to put them. And I think that's made Jack's job probably harder mm-hmm. because now we're getting phone calls from magicians all around the world that want those apartments. And so
you only got two rooms. Yeah,
we only got six. So it's made it very exciting for us. But I think I've probably put more pressure on Jack because now he's getting more phone calls than he ever has in his entire life. So
with good quality magicians who are wanting to come and work, because again, you can be getting a living wage. I mean, it's good.
It's not just that. It's not just the living wage. And gosh, if I could pay you $2,000 a week, I'd definitely do that in a heartbeat. But it's a benefit to our members. They're seeing magicians they haven't seen in quite a while, you know, those that avoided us because they were losing money by coming out. Now they're making a little money. Hopefully they're on the way home with a little money in their pocket, and they enjoyed the week. They felt like they're rock stars, and they were able to hang around, obviously, the club and meet people and hang around people that they haven't seen in years.
Now, Neil Patrick Harris, I assume, was a friend of yours long before you came to the castle then?
I had never met Neil until my final interview. I had a search committee that I worked with that interviewed me a total of 3 times, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then my final interview, which was a doozy, let me just say that, I met with the board of directors and the board of trustees all in one night. So I spent 2 hours in the board of directors, and then I spent 2 hours in with the board of trustees. So a 4-hour interview, and I only had, from the time it took to walk from the Peller to the Houdini chamber was the amount of time I had in between meetings. But that was the first time I met Neil. And, I honestly believe I may not have been his first choice, but I think the board all voted and I kind of went my direction. But the relationship I had with Neil, with any president right now, with Erica Larson, they're the person I talk to at least once or twice, probably every 2 days, just to let them know what's going on. They're the ones, they're my confidants, and Neil always made time for me.
Yeah.
It didn't matter where he was. I mean, my favorite.
I heard he was very interested and involved.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. He had a lot of influence on what we were doing. My favorite story, it was a Saturday night. I was at home with my 2 7-year-old twin boys, and I was sitting on a paint can throwing baseballs, you know, and they were hitting them in the street, and my phone rang, and it was Neil, and it happened to be the night before the Tonys.
Okay.
He was the host of the Tonys the following night, and he's like, you know, Joe, talk to me about what's going on at the castle. And I said, Neil, you probably have 9 million other things to worry about. Don't worry, we can talk on Monday. Yeah. He goes, no, you know what? The show's loaded. We're locked and loaded. Everything's good. Rehearsal went well. I want to talk about something that's
take my mind off that.
Yeah, not the Tonys.
Yeah.
And we talked for 2 hours. Wow. I kept throwing baseballs to my son, and we just kept talking and talking and talking. We talked about not only business, but also, you know, our families and so on and so forth. As you well know, he's got twins.
Yes.
He's got boy-girl twins.
Right.
So we've always had great chats about that.
He's got, I think, a daughter's named Sloan. I have two sons. One has twin daughters and named Harper and Sloan. And it was funny whenever that we found out that his daughter's name is Sloan, too. But
I think it's Gideon and Harper.
Sloan. Because it was Harper and Sloan, so that's what it was.
Yeah. It's great. You know, it's funny. He always kept on asking, is it going to get better? Is it going to get better? And I'm like, it's going to get better. Once you get through 2.5, it gets better. Once they're able to start sleeping through the night, it gets better. But, you know, he's got his own animal. He's got boy-girl twins. I've got boy-boy twins. You know, that's a benefit to me is I can sign them up for the same baseball team, or they're on the same football team, or they're on the same soccer team, or they go to acting classes together. You know, I don't have to do the teacup with one and then go play the football with the other. So,
Now, who was the president before Neil?
I don't know. It was Robert Lamoureux, but that was prior to my time.
Yeah,
I arrived in 2012, and Neil had been president for about 9 months.
Don't you credit Neil a lot for helping to transition with you? I mean, with your leadership and with what he was doing, I think, because he was always one to promote the Magic Castle when he was on television and whatnot, and people know him as a magician also, as well as an actor.
You can't put a dollar figure on what Neil did.
Right.
You know, Neil doesn't get the credit he should. Mm-hmm. You know, being who he is and being a star as he is, he really took the club through a very rough transition, obviously with the president stepping down, terminating the general manager that they had prior to my arrival, going through the fire of 2011,
trying
to keep the club together, and then going through the process of hiring a new person and finding somebody such as myself that didn't come from the magical world, you know, more from the private club industry. You know, he was very supportive. I think at times he probably wasn't sure if it was going to work out. But he believed in what I was trying to do, and I listened to him of what he wanted. His whole philosophy was, I want everybody to have a great experience when they're on the property, the best. And that's what I've tried to deliver. And I think when you look at the financial results, I think we've been able to do that. You know, there was a lot of untapped potential here.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've actually tapped it yet. I think we haven't plateaued. We continue to grow. We've gone from an 8.5 million club when I arrived to last year we did 13.5.
Wow.
And it looks like already this year we're already trending after the first quarter to do close to 15 million.
Wow.
I mean, it's pretty amazing considering we only have 24,000 square feet.
Is that all?
24,000 square feet.
Well, that's part of the magic and the illusion of this building, that it's, I guess, like the TARDIS. It's larger on the inside.
You know, it's funny. I said that last night. I actually hosted a Club Managers Association event here. So my fellow club managers from country clubs and yacht clubs and social clubs all throughout Southern mm-hmm. California, mm-hmm. I had 60 of my fellow colleagues in the... And so I got up and I was able to talk about the club. And I think that's the greatest illusion of all, is when you pull up, we're actually four times bigger than what you see from the street.
Yeah.
It is the greatest illusion of all. When right. you think of 540 capacity and we're reaching those levels now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, it's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to move business, you know, Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays as well. When I first arrived, we'd have 50 people in the building on Mondays. Mm-hmm. You know, last night we had over 300 people in the building on right. a Tuesday. Did you do all your shows yesterday?
I did all shows. However, that one show was not a full house, but I did all four. I was doing the early show, and on Monday, every show was full, standing in the side of the aisles, and so I like to say that they were already there. So when they applauded, I have to say I got standing ovations, at least from the people who were along the standing
That's
in the
great.
Aisles.
That's great. You know,
but no, I had the all four shows were all full on Monday night. I think it was last year, whenever I was working, or the year before, I was working the late show, the late shift, and on Monday night, that somebody I said, "Well, do you think I'm going to be doing all the shows?" So probably not on a Monday, because next day's Tuesday. People are going to be working. It's first of the week, etc. Goodness sakes! I mean, still, I think it was at 11:45 or whenever the last show was. It was still a packed house.
Yeah.
And so that's really, I'm sure, a tribute to you and a lot of the hardworking staff here.
Well, if I were to have a complaint from one of our members that happened to be performing that particular week, I think that's it, which is, Joe, you know I was contracted to do 28 shows. I had to do 28 shows.
Exactly.
You know, that's not always been the case. You know, we've seen a big change in the palace, too. You know, those that work in the palace do have the opportunity to work the brunches, which Saturdays and Sundays could be an additional six shows.
That's right.
In the past, we've always done two on Saturday, maybe two on Sunday. But now that we've moved, instead of serving 300 people every Saturday and Sunday brunch, mm-hmm. you know, we're now serving 625.
Yeah.
So they're having to do those six shows. When you factor in the 21 shows they are normally contracted to do, and then to do another six, we're starting to wear out some of our right. performers that are booked in the palace, that's for sure.
You know, I was a house magician at the Magic Island in Houston, and they didn't have set times for shows. It was kind of whenever that there were enough people that they would have the shows. And as far as the evening stage shows, similarly, then, Joe, they would say, okay, you're contracted for, I'd forgotten how many, X number of shows a week. And usually you may do one or two on Monday, Tuesday, and then it really gets busier towards the end of the week. And mm-hmm. it could do six stage shows or so towards the end of the week. But the close-up was, as long as there were people waiting, you just had to keep moving. I remember Roger Klaus working one time, and it was about midnight. He said, look, I've done 18 shows. I'm done. He said, I'm tired. You know, 18 shows. You know, I mean, they just one right after the other. So
it's a lot. And we know it. We don't. Very rarely do we approach and say, "Could you squeeze in a fifth show
another
tonight?"
Show,
yeah, mm-hmm. we normally don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great because you got the other guys, you know, who are locals who kind of contribute that.
We have a lot of impromptu. I mean, that's the best part. We did put together a committee that we call them the JOC Posse.
That's what I was going to say, yes.
They're there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and they kind of control mm-hmm. The Hat and Hair in the museum area, which is in the basement underneath the close-up gallery. Mm-hmm. They control the impromptu. So their job is basically to monitor the other magician members that happen to be performing impromptu so they don't go too long. We try and keep the sets to 18 minutes, just like the show times in the close-up gallery and the parlor.
Right.
But the JOC is there just in case if there isn't anybody performing. They could perform as well.
Right.
And they get into the work as well. They are the unsung heroes. I mean, really, they're the unsung heroes of the castle. And when we do have a crowd that surprised us, because mm-hmm. we do make some estimations. Mm-hmm. And at times we miss the estimation. That's what
it
is.
You never
know. You know, to be able to approach one of the impromptu performers and say, you know what, I'll buy you dinner mm-hmm. if you can do some shows just to help alleviate some of the crowds.
Right.
It works out really well
sure.
for us.
And one of the things, too, I think has just been added the last few years, and correct me if I'm wrong, and that is Mark and Nani Wilson, who are teaching magic classes, getting more people interested actually in the art, plus people who are members are taking these classes and becoming better magicians then too.
There is a lot of interest in taking magic classes. Our Magic University, and that's what we refer to it, it was started by Mark. It was really instructed by Dave Thorson. Dave stepped down last November. He has since retired and kind of gave up the teaching. But Mark has kind of stepped in and started taking care of Magic 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And now the Board of Trustees is working on Magic 3 and 4. We really like to run it like a university where, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, there is a demand. It seems like people want to learn more and more magic. So once they get done with Magic 1, they focus right right into Magic 2. And if we can offer a 3 and a 4, it's just going to make them better magicians. You know, we're now averaging about 18 new magician members per month. Our membership audition committee, which meets the first Monday of every month, has had to add additional auditions throughout the month to be able to accommodate the amount of people that want to audition to become magician members here at the AMA, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Magic University, it's booked from what I've been told all the way through October of this year, and we're already starting to take signups for January, February, and March of next year. So, again, it's an uptown problem, not a downtown problem. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of interest in magic right now.
How many members do you have?
We have 5,200 as of right now.
Residents and non-residents?
That's all combined. Okay. We have about 2,700 magician members, both resident and non-resident, and about 2,400 magic enthusiasts, which we refer to as associates.
Okay.
We have frozen membership sales for the associates for the first time in our history. We really felt like we were getting to a number that was a little uncomfortable. And so we've gone to a membership freeze. We're going to see what kind of deterioration we have with the number as we get to the end of the year. But we already have a wait list, if you can imagine this, for associate memberships that's 100 strong.
Wow.
100 strong.
Now, those are magicians or magic enthusiasts.
Just associate members. And we froze as of January 1st. It's April 22nd? And we already have over 100 names that are wanting to become members.
Well, was the idea just that you don't want to have this known as just a club for magicians? Or,
you know, the associates were brought on early on from the stories that I've been told and read through Bill's writings. They added the associate memberships because magicians weren't buying enough food and beverage.
Okay.
And so they added that category back in the early 60s, maybe right after they opened in 63. The associates are obviously very important to us. They love what they do. It's almost like having an annual pass to Disneyland. They want to come in and enjoy great shows, and they do. And they're able to obviously issue guest passes. Now, every guest pass that you send out, all guests have to have dinner. Members don't. We don't have a food and beverage requirement. Mm-hmm. They can come in, see as many shows, buy a couple drinks, and they're out the door for, you know, $75 total.
Yeah.
It's a great deal as far as I'm concerned. Freezing the associates, the reason why we took that step, we were hearing a lot of issues about, I can't get into the club that like I used to get in. And we understand that. We are busier than we've ever been. Mm-hmm. So freezing memberships to obviously drop that number down, maybe 2,000 instead of 2,400 members, maybe 2,000 is kind of like the better number for us to have when it comes to associate membership.
Right.
So we'll see what will happen. I have not approached the board as of yet to talk about reopening those memberships, but when we do, it'll be very small group. We're not just going to bring in 100 new members immediately. We'll take maybe 5 to 10 on a monthly basis moving forward, so we can actually kind of see where those capacity issues kind of fall.
Now, what would you say would be your busiest time of the year or busiest night? Is there something like Halloween or Christmas, or do you have certain times that are busier than others?
The entire month of December is obviously very busy for us. We do book a lot of
events. You do buyouts?
We do. The board has allowed us to book 12 per year, but I don't think we've ever done more than 6. Mm-hmm. We do have a buyout this coming December on Thursday, December 3rd, which is a great financial windfall for us.
Sure.
I think total cost out the door is close to $100,000 for that buyout.
Just so one night.
It does help us. Last year was the first year in December that we actually surpassed $1 million of food and beverage sales in 1 month.
1 month.
Now, we did a couple things to do. The Peller Theater, which has always notoriously been just Friday, Saturday, and Sundays, we opened up the Peller to be Monday through Sunday. That was an idea that I had just to see if it would actually work, and we did that in 2014, and it was very successful for us. We have now added a fourth night of the Peller. So our new system moving forward will be Thursday through Sunday, because I always felt that first show on Friday at 8:30 down in the Peller Theater, where that was their first show of the week in front of a live audience. Mm-hmm. I really felt like we were doing a disservice to the performers.
Putting them on the spot.
Yeah, they need to have like a typical Monday, like you had this week, where you kind of work out your show, work out your wiggle, and kind of get the timing down.
Right.
The Peller now Thursday through, and we're not earmarking anyone for the Peller on Thursdays. Thursdays, it's completely first come, first serve. Now, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we do earmark some of our diners to actually enjoy that show versus the Palace. But Thursdays, it's all first come, first serve. So it's given a great opportunity for our members to come in on a Thursday and see that show without having to fight the crowds, which is fantastic.
Now, the Peller is a relatively new theater down there, as I guess the WC Fields Bar was kind of new. Are there any plans for new bars or theaters or showrooms to be added?
Well, it's funny that you bring that up. No, we are not adding any more showrooms at the present time, but we are remodeling that entire area. Mm-hmm. Trini Peller, Albert's wife, passed away about 3 years ago, and they left in the will an additional sum of money for us to kind of upgrade the Peller Theater, which we're very excited about. So we are in the midst of going to upgrade the entire sound and lighting for not only the Peller Theater. We've actually extended the project to be the entire inner circle. So we're going to be redoing the ceilings in all four areas. Mm-hmm. The W.C. Fields performer, which is Thursday through Sunday, we really needed to work a little bit on the lighting and the sound for that general area. We need to give the controls back to the performer. So as the performer's there, he or she could obviously control the lighting, control the sound, turn it up, turn it down, be able to shut off the music in the other portions of the room. Because as we saw last week with Doc Eason, Doc does 2 weeks straight. He starts to lose his voice toward the end.
Well, I noticed he had a microphone.
He did, which is good. And that's kind of a relatively new thing for us. But we're going to upgrade that system. Tom Frank, who's one of our performers that works that area quite often. You know, Tom works over at Universal Studios. He has a great system, a great setup when it comes to a microphone. Brings in his own speakers and everything. And he's been instrumental to help us with the project. As Rob Zabrecki and John Lovick have had a lot of say on what we wanted to do with the Peller Theater. So when you talk about projects, that's going to be a big one. We're going to have to shut down probably for 2 weeks the Peller Theater to be able to do this. So we're going to.
Are you thinking about enclosing the W.C. Fields bar as well, or always keeping that kind of open?
No, we're going to try and keep it open. But if you haven't been here in a while, what we've done is put in some raking. So we've put in a couple risers to kind of create a nice little stadium atmosphere. We have put up some curtains, but very rarely do the performers want the curtains up and drawn. They really want it to be open. I would imagine it could be distracting.
Happened. I was watching Doc a couple times Friday night, and there were people waiting in line for the Peller behind there. And they were laughing and loud, and they were louder than what Doc was. Of course, it was towards the end of his 2 weeks, and his voice was starting to go a little bit. But he was saying, could you guys pipe down a little bit back over there? He was trying to talk over the other group that was over there.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why we're doing this project, is to give Doc or whoever's working there a little bit more power on that microphone to be able to control that area. It's very exciting. You know, this is one of the major projects in my tenure that we've been able to do down there, really, to upgrade. I mean, changing the entire ceiling to make it all look the same, which is number one. That'll help my events department, because when we do open up that wall to the Peller and make it a big banquet space, you know, having the same ceiling in all five areas will be very important. But having house lights, you know, right now our house lights that we have down there are just things we bought from probably Office Depot to actually put in some nice design and then buy better theatrical lights. You know, the lights we have down there are super gigantic. You know, nowadays they make
LEDs
much smaller.
Exactly.
The MR15s, they're making very small. We can give it a really wide base. So with Zabrecki and Lovick, they both produce shows. They're both starring shows. They've really been instrumental on specking out some equipment for us. So very excited to get that started. It's probably going to begin maybe the second week of July. And we hope to have it done by the end of July, which is our future Starns Week. So hopefully that'll be the first group that we have in there.
Where do you see the castle going or growing, let's say 5, 10, 15 years down the road? You say, of course, you're looking to have this everything under contract to 2040, but what kind of really long-term plans?
Well, first and foremost, we want to buy the property. So that's kind of my legacy here. You know, I was kind of directed by the board to obviously start generating a certain number when it comes to revenue to start putting in the bank. We feel like $6 million is the number we need to have in the bank to be able to acquire a loan and then be able to put down a down payment. But we'd like to solidify our existence here at 7001 Franklin, you know, here in Hollywood. If we were able to purchase the building as well as the parking lot, a future project would be putting in a parking structure, which would obviously solve all of our parking woes. I'm not sure if that'll open up a can of worms with some of our neighbors, but I've got an idea of putting possibly a park on the top level of the parking structure and only giving the neighbors keys. And so hopefully that'll cut down on their anger toward building a structure
that's
in this area. But buying the property and really starting to really truly look at every square inch of the building and start making some upgrades. You know, maybe taking down some drywall and fixing the electrical in certain areas, you know, making sure we have ample circuits to be able to handle the open sesame door and some of our other gags that all of our members know are here that sometimes, you know, break down. I mean, even when we do a banquet downstairs and we plug in four or five heat lamps to run a buffet, it blows circuits right and left. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't own the building right now.
It's just an older structure.
So I go to the landlord and say, hey, we'd love to upgrade this electrical. And they're like, okay, what's the cost? And you give them the cost number. And they're like, yeah, we probably won't do that at this particular time. And again, I don't want to pull the trigger and pay for it, because all I'm doing is raising the real estate value for the landlord.
For later. later when you do want to buy it.
Right. So I am set. We hopefully in the next couple years we can negotiate a little bit of a longer term contract with the Glover family. Yeah. Right now we're still on a month to month. I'd love to get like a 2 or 3 year contract from the Glovers, which will buy us some time to be able to put some money in the bank. And then eventually sit down with them and say, you know, what's the property worth? And start negotiations.
Right.
That would be great. The first time I visited this property, I was 9 years old in 1981. Mm-hmm. I saw my uncle Paul Fiddler perform on the Palace stage, and I fell in love with this place. I want to keep us here. I don't want to leave. And so my goal is to generate enough revenue over the next few years to be able to purchase that. And that hopefully will be the legacy of the board, the legacy of Neil, the legacy of my tenure as general manager, as well as hopefully be the pride of all of our membership.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for your time. And let me just, as we conclude over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question to you would be, what is your magic word? What is it that's important to your life? What's your moral compass? What do you live by? It could be a phrase or a sentence or...
Good question. You know, teaching my kids, it's all about pride. It's all about pride. You know, I try and teach my employees all the time. You know, the one thing I look at to see whether or not you have pride is whether or not you shine your shoes. You shine your shoes, you got a lot of pride in who you are and what you look like and how you act.
That's right.
And I think that's big. You know, pride is something that I think we all forget about from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, we're all egotistical maniacs when it comes to that, but I think pride in what you do, pride in who you are, pride in how you treat people. You know, so I guess my keyword would be pride.
Because that's what leaves your legacy, then also people remember you by. Good. Well, I'll remember our conversation very well. Thank you very much, Joe. That was Joe Furlow, and I appreciate your time. And for the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out.
Well, there you have it. That's what's going on with the Academy of Magical Arts. Thanks goes to all who have worked to make the AMA what it is today and those who have the vision and means to take it far into the future for the next generation of magicians. And thanks to the members who support the Academy through membership and attendance to keep the Magic Castle financially stable. And speaking of finances, I want to thank those of you who support the Magic Word with your donations and ongoing pledges. Your appreciation for my work through your generosity is humbling, to say the least. I do not yet have any sponsors for this podcast, so it is only through your support and out of my own pocket that I can bring you these podcasts each week. If you have the means and want to join many like you who want to support this podcast, then please consider becoming a friend of the Magic Word through a one-time donation or becoming a patron through Patreon.com. You can click on the link at the top of the MagicWordPodcast.com blog, or you can visit Patreon, that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/themagicword for more details. However you choose to support us, and whatever amount you can afford is sincerely appreciated. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and stay in the crosswalk. Scotty out.